Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Boral Limited FY 2023 results call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Vik Bansal, CEO and Managing Director. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Vik Bansal here. Thanks for joining the call today. I'm joined by Belinda Shaw, our CFO, who will co-present with me, and Luke Thrum, our Head of Investor Relations. I'm pleased to be presenting Boral's FY 2023 results today as its ninth CEO in a history spanning 77 years. Before running through the presentation, I will encourage participants to refer to our ASX release annual report with 4E financial statements, which was also released this morning. I will also take disclaimer on slide two of this pack as read. If I can ask you to please move to slide three. We will aim to work through the presentation as quickly as we can to allow time for as many questions as possible. In terms of the agenda, I'll run through our business, first part of the performance overview, and then Belinda will cover CapEx, cash flow, and balance sheet. I'll follow with our network strategy and property update. Belinda will conclude the presentation with our priorities and outlook before opening the line for questions. Moving on to slide five. Allow me to reintroduce Boral. We are the largest integrated construction material company in Australia, with a rich legacy and importantly, a significant social contribution. Our operational reach spans 360 sites across each state and territory, employing approximately 7,500 employees and contractors. The business proudly serves almost 14,000 customers and work with close to 8,500 suppliers. We move approximately 50 million tons of product and pave circa 4,000 kilometers of road every year. Rarely a day goes by that you won't pass one of our sites or 3,500 vehicles, or enter a building, use a road, bridge, tunnel, footpath, or other piece of critical infrastructure that our people and products are responsible for. Moving on to slide six. Boral's vertically integrated network of upstream and downstream operations provide competitive advantage. Upstream cement and quarries are difficult to replicate. These are large investments that take many years to secure, develop, and optimize, and hence provide barriers to entry. Midstream is our recycling operations. With customers asking for more and more repurposed material, this business unit offers an opportunity for Boral in addition to supplementing our quarry life. Downstream is our concrete batching operations and concrete placement network, which delivers high-performing product closest to the customer's requirement. Here, customer proximity is a leverage and vast footprint is a strength. Our asphalt business, as part of vertical integration with bitumen JV and quarries, is growing and remains a preferred partner on major infrastructure projects. The degree of integration is demonstrated with 50% of upstream volumes being supplied to downstream operations, which account for their 90% of materials sourced. Moving on to slide seven, industry value drivers. This slide identifies the key industry value drivers: Boral's strategic alignment, Boral's strategy alignment, and our opportunity for business and earnings growth. Value drivers include building integrated networks, both upstream and downstream. Driving customer loyalty through relationships and service delivers better value outcomes. Ensuring key operational and logistics capabilities are critical to optimize assets, life, and helps reducing cost per unit. This, in turn, helps with value capture, leading to operating leverage. ESG credentials provide license to operate while meeting the needs of all our stakeholders, for example, regulators and communities we operate in. Boral's PEMAF strategy has strong alignment with these value drivers, and from an opportunity perspective, we see upside in all areas, which is what we are trying to execute. Moving on to performance overview on slide nine. Safety is the highest priority at Boral, and our TRIFR performance improved by 47% compared to FY 2022 and significantly reversed the trend of recent years. More importantly, more important than the safety stats is the 83 fewer people were injured at Boral in FY 2023 compared to FY 2022. Several key safety initiatives have driven this outcome, including the simplification of safety discussions and metrics, combined with accountability, engagement, and ownership at all levels within the organization. We're also working on our organization health and culture at Boral. Tangible artifacts that provide clarity of purpose, direction, accountability with supporting tools are being rolled out as Boral Way to ensure alignment across the organization. Significant improvement in Boral will come from engaged leadership at all levels, which should and must have an operator and an owner mindset. Moving to our FY23 financial highlights on page 10. Like safety, I'm pleased to announce significant FY23 improvement across all financial metrics. Revenue up 17%, EBITDA up 38%, EBIT up 106%, delivering an EBIT margin of 6.7%, up 289 basis points. Second half margin of 7.7%, up 200 basis points on first half FY23, and up 566 basis points on second half FY22. Return on funds employed was 10.4%, up 515 basis points. We have been able to demonstrate improvement in a challenging cost environment. I remain of high conviction that, among other things, Boral's success will be underpinned by our ability to standardize and simplify our business. Moving to slide 11. The financial details tell the story of significant improvement across all key metrics. While I will limit my comments to underlying results, it is also good to see strong statutory results from continuing operations. Net revenue up 17% to $3.5 billion, with improved price and volume across all regions and products. EBITDA rose 37.6% to $454 million, enabled by volume, price, and cost abatement. Underlying EBIT was $231.5 million. NPAT was up 304% to $143 million, with an adjusted EPS up 303% to 12.9 cents per share. Operating cash flow was up 65% to $358.7 million. ROFE and ROCE both delivered material year-on-year improvement. I'm moving on to slide 12. Our financial trends reflect a recovery from recent years and gives an assurance that we are on track. All numbers are for continuing operations to provide a proper comparison and demonstrate clutter-free improvement in a core business. What is pleasing is the improvement in both earnings and margin expansion, indicating improved operating leverage through operating discipline. Also to note is a slight loss from property segment, which was expected. We are working on executing a good strategy for our properties, which will set us up for long-term sustained accretive earnings. Hence, results this year does highlight a strong improvement in our core construction material business. Moving to slide 13. We saw a movement in our sales segmentation with a decline in detached housing, multi-resi, and commercial in FY23 over previous years. We're expecting this trend in residential part of our business to continue in the first half of FY24 as a minimum. We should remember that the long-term average growth of concrete in key markets in Australia has been approximately 2.5%. While volume has increased, mixed changes are impacting our average selling price throughout every selling price. We saw improvement in volume across each segment at varying levels. Cement, concrete, and quarries grew by 5%, 6%, and 7% respectively. Asphalt also performed well for the year, growing its volume by 7%. Recycling growth was 13%, albeit coming off a low base. Although the business has started to work closer with the markets, we have a significant more work to do to regain our leadership positions. Moving on to page 14. Boral saw price escalation in FY23 across all segments. Price escalation was different by region, reflective of the competitive tensions. Very strong focus on price and price-related discipline helped us to recover flat price over the past 4 to 5 years. Our commercial and sales team did a good job in working with our customers who, like us, were facing cost pressures on all fronts. Price escalation was desperately needed to recover the cost inflation we have faced over the last 12 to 18 months. As you can see, all key cost lines in our P&L face significant headwinds, increase that we have not seen in decades. We did all we could to mitigate cost pressures, making adjustments to our cost base through overhead reduction, procurement initiatives, and price escalation. It is very important that we appreciate that while rate of inflation growth might subside in FY24, we are not in a deflationary environment, meaning cost increases seen so far ahead to stay. we will have to remain highly price disciplined to just stand still. Price discipline becomes all the more important if volume comes under pressure, as cost per unit will only get worse. There is only so far we can work as a business on cost and productivity in short term without damaging the long-term sustainability of the business. I'm also pleased to hear that the construction industry is finally having lots of conversation of moving away from fixed price contracts. Fixed price contracts will always squeeze somebody lower in the construction value chain. It only gets worse in high inflation environment. We will continue to work with our customers to improve our service and engagement on volume and pricing. I hand over to Belinda and slide 15.
Thank you, Vic, and good morning, everyone. Moving on to capital expenditure, CapEx for the full year totaled $223 million, down 29% versus the 2022 corresponding period. As a percentage of revenue, CapEx was 6.4%, and as a percentage of depreciation and amortization, CapEx was 100%. This was in line with previous expectations that we would be keeping cash CapEx spend below or close to depreciation amortization. We've been very pleased with the completion of our Geelong cement facility and the capacity expansion it provides, as well as our progress on the implementation of the chlorine bypass at Berrima, which will enable us to grow our alternate fuels for cement manufacturing and reduce our emissions. And as previously discussed, we've been very disciplined on the way that we are spending capital and will continue this discipline in 2024. Turning to cash flow on page 16. Operating cash flow of $359 million is an increase of $142 million, primarily driven by improved operating performance and lower interest and tax payments, partially offset by some net working capital increases. The financing outflow of $654 million primarily relates to the previously discussed debt repayment of $629 million, whereas the prior comparable period primarily relates to the capital return to shareholders. From a statutory perspective, it is worth highlighting that in the prior comparable period, investment cash flow includes net proceeds from business disposals, primarily related to the North American building products. Turning to the balance sheet on page 17. Boral's balance sheet continues to be extremely strong. Given the strength of the balance sheet, during the year we've been able to execute a number of measures to optimise liquidity, including debt repayments as well as cancellation of undrawn committed bank facilities. With $658 million of cash at the 30th of June and a net debt ratio of 0.7 times underlying EBITDA, which is well below our target range, optimising our capital structure will continue to remain a focus. Funds employed at the 30th of June is $2.3 billion, which is a slight increase from 2022, driven by a slight build of net working capital. I'll now hand back to Vic to provide an update on our network, starting on slide 19.
Thanks, Belinda. On slide 19, a key upstream business is our significant cement operations. With 17 operating sites on the east coast of Australia, Boral Cement has around 4 million tons per annum capacity. Our operations include clinker manufacturing at Berrima, our Marulan limestone mine, our Maldon and Geelong facilities, and the Geelong fly ash facility. The New South Wales assets in particular are privileged assets with differential rail access providing operational and network flexibility. With manufacturing and importation on east coast, combined with strategic partnership in South Australia and WA, we believe we have an optimum upstream cement operations. Ensuring that these operations are optimized operationally and utilized fully with right economics of price and volume is critical to develop through FY24. Moving to quarries on slide 20. We have 76 quarry operations that supply around 30 million tons of product annually to downstream operations and external customers. With significant supply capacity across key regions, our high-quality, long-life, hard rock and sand resources are truly prized assets. Our operations are efficient, cost-competitive and well-located close to key demand centers and rail networks. We have significant opportunities to improve utilization and overall equipment efficiencies, or OEE for short, for our quarries. Getting commercial and cost economics right for each of our quarries will drive margin improvement. Improving our asset position, bridging network gaps will continue as an important strategic play. Moving to concrete on slide 21. Boral's downstream concrete operations have delivered proven technical solutions for customers through a significant network of 209 operational sites. Our concrete team's proven technical ability is industry-leading, providing high strength and specialty mixes capable of solving the most complex engineering challenges. Proximity to customers is critical value driver. Our diverse footprint assists us in optimizing both Boral and customer outcomes. We will continue to review our network and plant capability to deliver optimum performance and volume outcomes. Exploring options for new locations and upgrades to existing locations is ongoing. Reducing operating costs per cubic meter at a plant level is critical. Rollout of auto allocations, our logistics technology tool, has been successfully completed in 4 metro cities across the nation. As expected, it is improving our logistics cost and service levels. Moving to Asheville on slide 22. Asheville is one of our businesses with wide scope and capability. Scope of works range from road maintenance, new residential and industrial subdivisions, through to head contractor work such as laying the tarmac for the new Western Sydney Airport. The Western Sydney Airport provides an example where our depth of technical experience and knowledge is a value differential and why customers award us such prestigious contracts. There are fair few complicated large infrastructure projects planned for the near future. The pipeline is strong and Boral is well placed to capitalize on these opportunities. Improving operational performance, contract discipline, and securing right margin opportunities will deliver more value for this business. Moving to recycling and concrete placing on slide 23. Boral's recycling operations receive and recycle over 2 million tons of construction and demolition and excavation materials for reuse in construction, making it one of the largest C&D recyclers in Australia. With a broad range of inbound materials and a high recovery rate, the operations are both efficient and supply much-needed circular solutions to both internal and external customers. A recycling business makes strong strategic sense for Boral. It produces products suitable for quarries, concrete and asphalt mixes, and can even assist with the clean fill to rehabilitated end-of-life quarries. Moving slightly upstream through well-located transfer stations to receive the higher power of levy avoidance is the next phase of our recycling business. The right side on this slide highlights our concrete placing business. We have concrete placing business in New South Wales and Queensland, which extend our integrated supply chain with customers, providing concrete placing services. It brings Boral closer to the end customer in execution of projects. Moving to slide 25 on strategic update. I first introduced PMAF in my address at AGM back in November 22. I will update you on the progress we have made towards achieving them. On people, the new flatter organization structure is driving both alignment and accountability across the business. I talked about progress on people and safety earlier. Our new operating model deployment is in progress, including regional P&Ls and standardized back office, which will and should improve agility and accountability across the business. On environment, the circular economy represents a great opportunity for Boral. We have a clear decarbonization pathway to execute pragmatically. On markets, we are focusing on improving our customer experience to offer the best possible service outcomes. Work is underway to revamp our call-to-cash process, and considering the multi-year nature of this initiative, the aim is to break it into deliverable elements before proceeding to the next phase. On assets, we want safe, compliant, reliable, and optimized assets to create a true competitive advantage. With cost escalating across repairs and maintenance, plant and equipment, we're looking closely at how we can do better. The new simplified and standardized framework will drive fleet and equipment utilization. There is significant work to do on our assets, but when we get it right, we will see considerable benefits to flow through. As you can see from the progress arrows, we have some way to go. With the clear plans in place and execution mindset, we are confident we can deliver. I'll dig deep into environment and assets in coming pages, starting with environment on page 26. To understand our key focus in decarbonization, it is important to understand the key contribution to our carbon footprint. As shown in the left chart, almost 80% of our scope 1 and 2 emissions originate from cement and lime operations in New South Wales. Further, it is worth noting that approximately 70% of our scope 1 and 2 emissions originate at a single site, which is a cement manufacturing site at Berrima, the home to New South Wales' only remaining cement kiln. The figure on the right provides the breakdown of emissions by key drivers. A key point to note is that approximately 43% of our scope 1 and 2 emissions are process emissions resulting from the decomposition of limestone into key cement components and carbon dioxide. This means that more than 40% of our scope 1 and 2 emissions are very hard to abate process emissions, which are unlikely to be addressable in a short term and require further development in relevant technologies, including carbon capture storage and its utilization. Therefore, a key decarbonization focus in the short term will be reducing the emissions from thermal fuels as the second largest contributor to our scope 1 emissions and emissions from purchased electricity as a source of our scope 2 emissions. As we are making significant investments to address these emissions, highlighted on next slide 27. In particular, we are making good progress in reducing our electricity-related emissions by taking firm steps in a journey to transition to renewable electricity. To date, we have secured a major power purchase agreement, which will begin delivering renewable electricity in FY25. The upgrade investment to expand our alternate fuels program is well progressed. While we are investing on alternate fuels program, we've also made significant progress in reducing the cementitious intensity of our products. In FY23, lower carbon concrete represented approximately 28% of our concrete sales volume, up from 7% in FY22. Our focus on reducing the emissions from a supply chain are underway, implementing technologies, including automated allocations, which optimize our truck deliveries. We're also expanding our participation in the circular economy through growth of our recycling business. In FY23, we diverted more than 62% of our operational waste from landfill, completed the rehabilitation of approximately 118 hectares of land, and continued to manage 3 biodiversity offsite sites in New South Wales and Queensland. We want recarbonation to be broadly recognized as acceptance of 20 to 55% carbon capture naturally changes the whole narrative for us and the industry in general. Moving to slide 28. While we are making good progress in our decarbonization project, we also note our decarbonization priorities need to be optimized to meet our external obligations. A key external factor affecting our decarb priorities is the safeguard mechanism reforms. The safeguard mechanism reforms commenced 1st of July 23 require significant decrease in emissions baseline of safeguard mechanism facilities, which are approximately 215 facilities in Australia that produce more than 100,000 tons per annum of carbon. Our cement manufacturing facility at Berrima, covered under the safeguard mechanism, produces 1 million tons of scope 1 emissions per year. We believe that prioritizing further investment in key cement decarbonization pathways, which is our main focus, will well position to meet our safeguard mechanism obligations. We, however, believe that complementing the safeguard mechanism reform with an effective carbon border adjusted mechanism is absolutely critical to ensure that safeguard mechanism reforms do not lead to carbon leakage and do not disadvantage local manufacturing, especially in trade-exposed industries like cement manufacturing. Moving to slide 29. In line with changing ecosystem, we are updating our intermediate FY25 targets to establish an achievable yet ambitious goal of 12 to 14% absolute reduction from FY2019. We are also reviewing our FY2030 targets to ensure our targets are aligned with our obligations under safeguard mechanism and globally recognized pathways for cement industries. Our current FY30 targets are absolute targets set using SBTi absolute contraction approach, which as acknowledged by SBTi is one-size-fits-all target. SBTi, by the way, stands for Size-Based Target Initiative. Our new targets will consider the globally recognized pathways for the cement sector. The unique pathways applicable to cement sector is recognized by SBTi as newly released sectorial decarbonization approach, which acknowledges that due to its process emissions from limestone calcination in clinker production, the rate at which the sector can decarbonize will differ from the overall rate of decarbonization possible by society as a whole. We will transition to intensity-based targets for FY30 while progressing towards meeting our net zero ambition by 2050. We will confirm the new targets for FY30 in next 12 months. Moving on to assets update on slide 30. I spoke earlier about our vertically integrated network. The competitive advantage of a network comes from its ability to remain current, and hence our commitments to optimize our priced upstream infrastructure remain strong. We are making it a strategic priority to invest in our priced cement, quarry, and recycling assets. We have delivered the Geelong cement facility and a Tarong fly ash facility. Over at quarries, we have acquired Dunmore Hard Rock Reserve in New South Wales and Hillview Sand in Victoria. In recycling, we have established our Adelaide base and expanded into broader material solutions. In Asheville, we have completed the Deer Park RAP upgrade and upgraded our bitumen tanks in Toowoomba, Queensland. There's a long list of work in progress initiatives, including new plant and upgrade to sites across the network. Moving to property on slide 32. Boral remains committed to applying a fixed asset lifecycle approach to property, a more deliberate and strategic approach to managing fixed assets through its lifecycle from core construction material to its property phase is now being taken. While the construction material segment, the team secures, while within the construction material segment, the team secures locations and approvals necessary to operate our leading integrated network. We then operate and optimize the assets to strengthen performance, profitability, and position Boral for long-term success. Once it is determined that a site is surplus to operations, the team shifts the focus to repurposing the asset to the best combination of recurring and divestment earnings. We have a surplus property portfolio of close to $1 billion, made up of about 30 properties over about 3,800 hectares. Moving to slide 33. The two secured opportunities are properties at Donnybrook and Scoresby in Victoria. These sites are being repurposed at the end of their operating life. Donnybrook is rezoned with development and sales underway. Boral's land is expected to support about 3,000 dwellings upon completion of the development. We expect to receive payment of $10 million per annum in FY25 through to FY27. This is followed by more than $300 million of undiscounted net cash flow from FY29 until the end of the development, currently expected to be late 2030s. At Scoresby, approximately half of 171 hectare site is being rezoned for residential development. Rezoning to be completed in 2024, which could lead to more than $600 million of undiscounted net cash flows expected over the life of development. Turning now to some existing opportunities in progress on slide 35. In addition to the opportunities secured, we continue to progress opportunities for several other properties. Some of those are shown here on slide 34. Warren Ponds has been identified as a future possible area to bring forward rezoning by up to 10 years. In addition to Warren Ponds, the Western Sydney Lake, or formerly PLDC, of which Boral is a 40% shareholder, and Bombo Quarry, with the significant work continuing on both properties to progress the development opportunities on each site. We are also assessing the long-term and highest value proposition for our Deer Park property, which is adjacent both to industrial and residential areas. The existing use of this land now has some serious limitations. While the timeline for the repurposing of many of these properties is dictated by various factors, including rezoning and rehabilitation, they represent significant value to the business that will deliver substantial earnings in the future. I will now hand back to Belinda to wrap up the presentation with priorities and outlook on slide 36.
Thanks, Vic. Moving on to our priorities and outlook, safety continues to be our highest priority and we'll continue to build on our improvements from 2023. We'll continue our focus on achieving our decarbonisation targets with the initiatives that Vic has just highlighted. Commercial discipline and rigour, customer service and sales effectiveness will continue to remain a focus and will be important to ensure we achieve price realisation beyond cost recovery and service our customers extremely well. We'll continue to invest in our assets and we'll maintain a strong capital discipline. We'll continue to build on our capabilities across operations and logistics for optimisation and cost reduction. Improved earnings needs to reflect on cash and hence our cash conversion cycle will continue to be a focus. And we'll continue to focus on our strategic PMAF pillars, particularly our integrated network. In terms of outlook, assuming no significant shift in market demand or price environment, we expect to deliver an underlying EBIT in the range of $270 to $300 million for full year 24. That concludes our presentation and we'll now invite you to ask questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. We ask that you please limit yourself to two questions per person, after which you may then rejoin the queue. Your first question comes from Shaurya Vyson with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Rick. How are you? Hi, Belinda. Hi, Luke. Great. Congrats on a very good quarter, very good set of results, Rick. So just on pricing, right, clearly very strong. Could you give us a sense of how the pricing moved as we moved through the second half when demand was softening? So put another way, right, how did the pricing fare as demand softened? Were there any pushbacks? I have one more, but perhaps you want to take that first.
Sure. So pricing moved in the second half across the board, Shaurya, and I think the Q3 volume, which was very good, we did see a bit of demand softening in Q4 of the financial year. So Q3 demand and price was strong. Q4 was softening, but price carried on. But remember, price is a lever, you know, we need to push because of the cost pressures we are facing, right? So all the demand softened, but you can also see our revenue went up by 17%. So volume was ahead of last year. But you're right, the Q4 saw a bit of softening over Q3. But remember, volume has gone up significantly year on year, and so has price.
Yeah, that's helpful. And Vic, just on the costs, right, perhaps one for you and one for Belinda. So Vic, on the cost side, right, clearly you've done quite well on controlling the fixed costs, right? So just curious, from here, what's the best way to think about costs? Do you think most of the fixed cost reductions are done and the costs going forward will sort of be driven by your input costs or variable costs? I have one for Belinda, but perhaps you want to go first.
Okay, so I think in our business, cost is directly proportional to demand, Shaurya. So I think you're never done, I guess. You know, as I've said it before, you know, cost discipline is the way to run it. I mean, the only way to run an industrial business is cost discipline, and cost management should not be an event. It should be how you run a business, and that's what we're trying to do. We will fear, you know, the cost pressures will carry on, and as I said in my presentation, the inflated cost which has come to bear with us is going to stay. The rate of inflation might go down, so we got to constantly work on cost issues like procurement, getting better productivity, simplification. That all carries on. I don't think that stops.
That's helpful. And Belinda, this one is perhaps for you. So could you give us an update on your hedging positions across your key inputs, or they are very similar to what you told us on the Investor Day?
Yeah, they continue to be really similar to what we had on Investor Day. We obviously look at all of our commodities. The accounts actually does a really good recap of all of our hedging positions, and you can see them quite clearly. I'd be happy to take you through that later today. But yeah, pretty much in line with what we talked at Investor Day.
Okay, great. Thanks. I'll jump into the queue. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Lee Power with UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, Vic, Belinda, Luke. Vic, just in terms of your outlook, the commentary around no significant shift in market demand or price environment, I know you made some comments earlier around longer term concrete volumes. Can you give us an idea of what you're actually assuming in terms of volumes across the business in FY24?
Yeah, so I think for FY24, our assumption is flattish to slightly up, man. We will see a resi drop in FY24 first half. But we do think it'll either come back, may not come back with full gusto, but it'll come back in second half. And we do believe the infrastructure investment will move from big engineering infrastructure to social infrastructure. So, but for FY24, we kind of assume flattish volume over FY23.
Okay, thank you. And then in terms of the price outlook, like you talked about the need to offset costs, like what level of pricing do you actually think you need to achieve in 24 just to offset the level of cost inflation that you have?
It's directly proportional to the cost pressure we're going to face, Lee, right? So, you know, if the energy price jumps up by 10-15% again, you have to do something about that, right? So I think that's what we are looking to do. And I think that's why, you know, I talk about fixed price contracts all the time. We should be able to move the price in relative to the cost. Otherwise, you end up the situation we are facing. If you look on page 11, cost and this business has not moved for 4.5 years. And that's just not doable when everything else moves, right? The other pressure is, I just want to again make a point, we are not going into deflationary environment. The cost which we have faced is stays. The EBAs we have signed are now signed. I don't see diesel going backwards. It might, the rate of growth might slow down, but it's not going backwards. So hence price discipline is critical. And then over and above, we've got to recover our price. That's just the good business to do, I think.
Okay. Maybe ask another way, like your point around the legacy fixed price contracts, like what contribution to ASP do you think you get from just those legacy projects rolling off and coming onto a new pricing dynamic?
I mean, we don't give that information, Lee. We never have. But I think, remember, we got 5 different product lines and different product lines have different permutations, combinations. So one, I don't have the number handy. 2, we don't give that anyway. But of course, every time a fixed price comes off, you have a better ASP indication, clearly.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. Appreciate the color. Thanks.
Your next question comes from Peter Stein with Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hi, Vic, Belinda, Luke, thanks for your time. Vic, could you give us a bit of a sense of the competitive context that you're seeing around all these dynamics we've just discussed, and how you think the environment could continue to support the price context that you so clearly put out there?
In general, Pete, obviously every industry have outliers, but in general, we are seeing a rational behavior across the country now. But obviously there are always outliers, and I guess they have to do what they have to do. And I think the way I would say, Pete, is the reason of putting those cost slides out there is that's the pressure we are facing, because quite often price takes the headline, but you can see the cost pressure, cartage, material, labor, energy. This is unabating for us for 12 to 18 months, right? And I'm sure our customers are facing the same. And so is our competitor. So if you are not rationally playing, doing something about your price, then I can only imagine you going backwards. So in response to that, we are seeing some rational behavior on price right now.
Thanks, Vic. And then perhaps just a related segueing from that, around customer service and that leading to better commercial outcomes, you talk about this a fair bit. Could you give us some examples and how that is flowing through for you and how you see it continuing to improve?
Yeah. I mean, if you do a call to cash process in any business, and Boral is no different, there is a multiple points where customer interacts with Boral. And I mean, we call it moments of truth. And when you look at those moments of truth, they start with when the first time customer call. How quickly are we picking up the phone call? What's your grade of service? How quickly are we confirming the order? How quickly are we delivering? When a truck goes to the site, when our truck doesn't arrive on site, that affects builder, his customer, and his customer further down, because there are multiple men and women standing at site waiting for the trucks. That's a moment of truth. Then we invoice the customer. That's a moment of truth. Then we call them for money. That's a moment of truth. And if we have disputes, that's an issue. All of these issues needs to get improved in our business. And I just want to make sure our people are doing a very good job. They work very hard. It's the processes which are letting them down. And that's what we're working through right now. So our grade of service has improved. Our delivery has improved, but nowhere close to where I would like to see. Our disputes are improving, but nowhere close to where we not need to improve. So I want to make sure by improving the process, our people's life becomes easier. But as importantly and more importantly, our customers' lives get important. So that work is underway, and we're working it through. It'll take about a couple of years, but we will get it right.
Right. Thanks, Vic. I'll leave it there.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Lisa Hyun with JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi. Morning, everyone. So, Vic, I guess you alluded to four-quarter volumes being a bit softer than the third quarter. Can you just talk about the exit run rate for volumes into June, I guess, and also into July so far?
It hasn't changed, Lisa. It's been, as I said, quarter four is slower than Q3, but nothing dramatic, I would say. Still in line with last year, but Q3 was very good for us, and I think so was generally if I hear the marketplace. But it's been steady as compared to last year.
Okay, sure. So I guess, you know, you also kind of talked about volumes being flat to slightly up next year. Can you just comment around just capacity utilization for Boral and where that kind of stands at the moment in terms of the cycle?
Well, again, it's a wide question, Lisa. Capacity utilization obviously differs for cement quarries and concrete batching plants and all that stuff. So average of an average probably wouldn't make any sense, I guess. But at the end of the day, you're spot on. If the volume is down, then the capacity comes down and utilization comes down, and then you got to take a stand. And the stand could include parking trucks on the batching plant, or could include taking shifts out, or could include reducing your working capital. All of those initiatives are in place. But you can only do those initiatives if you are managing the business with an operator mindset. So you're constantly looking at those metrics and reacting to them fast, because in this business, if the volume shifts, as you know, then you have to move fast, and we are pretty ready to do that.
Yeah, sure. That sounds great. And I just had a follow-up question on just cash conversion, maybe one for Belinda. But can you just remind us whether there's any seasonality linked with the cash conversion number? And you've talked about improving it, but just kind of giving us some context around what you're doing and what that cash conversion target might be on the medium term.
Yeah, so the cash conversion target is quite high. We won't share the exact number, but quite high. And I do think we can improve from where we are today. We're very focused on all elements of working capital, so obviously receivables, inventory and payables. And we have a lot of visibility and reporting out at the segment level. So a lot of good, I think, action items from the segments that are continuing to improve and a big focus. But it's things like looking at our inventory levels and saying, is that the optimal inventory level? Can we do better? And we're very focused on that.
Sure, because I guess you've talked about introducing, you know, I guess sales incentives linked to cash conversion in July. I guess should we see the benefit of that start to flow through in the next 12 months?
Yes, yep, yeah, for sure. And they are definitely linked to cash now, all of the sales plan.
Okay, sure. I guess I'll leave it there. Thanks, guys.
Your next question comes from Andrew Scott with with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
G'day, Vic and team. Vic, I might start with a compliment. I think I gave you grief last time for the disclosures. There's a lot more information in this pack, so credit where credit's due. Thank you for that. I might just kick off with an easy one. Maybe Belinda, the guidance you've given, I presume from the way you're talking that's an ex-property number there?
No, so we don't talk about ex-property, Andrew, anymore. It's a net number, but we're not expecting anything major, and if we do anything major on property, hypothetically we sell it, we'll put that out separately and significant.
Perfect, thanks for clarifying. And just a second one for me, leverage 0.7 times, no dividend. Can you help me understand that? It suggests maybe you've got something in mind for some uses of cash.
Quite simply, on dividend issues, franking credits, Andrew. So we don't have enough franking credits, and the idea is to collect enough franking credits before we put it to the board to resolve what they want to do with the dividend. So now there's no secret plan here, just to be clear.
All right, thank you. I'll jump off.
Your next question comes from Keith Chow with MST Marquee. Please go ahead.
Good morning, all. Thanks for your time today. Vic, just a first question to get a bit of context on, you know, how well each of your business units or profit centres are tracking at the moment. And what I understand is for each of your asset sites, you're now monitoring the progress towards targets. Can you give us a sense of, you know, on a proportionate basis, how many of those sites now are operating to targets? How did that compare to 3, 6, 12 months ago? Can you give us a sense of the sites that are effectively green and those that are still amber or red? Thank you.
Yeah, so I think what Keith, you're referring to what we call the drag index of the concrete batching plants. I think that's what you're referring, man.
Yep.
You know, quarries and cement and recycling sites are all good. Ashwell's all good. I think out of the total concrete batching plants, obviously we talked about last time, there are some sites which are not making money. There's a significant improvement in those, of course, on back of price and volume. If you remember, we didn't give the number last time, so we're not giving actual numbers, but I can tell you it has been a significant improvement on those. Otherwise, we won't be able to deliver the results we delivered. There are still some sites left. And I think I've come to the conclusion that we might have to live with some sites being in amber because for the strategic reasons. But I think ultimately that work has delivered significant benefits and will continue to do so.
Okay, thank you. And then the second one is a follow-up on Lee's question just on price. I know, you know, for commercial reasons, you don't want to disclose, you know, customer contract details, but perhaps if you can give us a sense of whether Boral is in, say, catch-up mode on price increases or price realisation, or what proportion of contracts are still rolling onto current market prices?
Matt, I can't give you that information, as you can appreciate, Keith, but we are working through them. And again, it's a very customer relationship, our product line by product line, as you can imagine, right? So cement is generally where you find we sign most of the long-term contracts, cement and asphalt, and I think we just got to work that through. But I think we'll get it right. We're not creating the problem by signing new ones now. So it's obviously a depleting number, but we don't have the number handy. Plus, in any case, I won't give that to the public domain anyway.
Okay, thank you. I'll circle back.
Thanks, Matt.
Your next question comes from Brooke Campbell-Crawford with Barrenjoey. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. Just one final one on the price topic, I guess. One way to, I guess, ask the question would be if there was no further or additional price increases across your products from here, what do you think the average sort of ASP increase would be in FY24, just, I guess, given the timing of the increases that you put through in FY23? Thanks.
I think there are two wrong assumptions here. I think that I would not assume that there will be no price increase in FY24. It's like probably saying there will be no cost increases in FY24. So we know that's not going to happen. I've said it very clearly, the rate of increase of FY23 is not what is going to get duplicated in FY24, but there will be price increases because cost will increase, right? So that's, I just want to make sure that's very clear. The second thing is it is worth reflecting that price increases started up in October, November of FY22. That's when it started. So now if you do the math, the first 4 months price increase didn't go up. So if you do the math, there will be an ASP increase naturally, even if you just stand still on FY24 over FY23. But I'm not saying that the price is going to remain steady. All I'm saying is the rate of increase will slow down. Yeah, but we definitely have an ASP coming through. But again, I won't put an actual number out anyway, as you would appreciate, Brooke.
Yeah, no, fair enough. That's all right. Just the second one, you mentioned earlier on about sort of more work to do to regain leadership positions across your business. Could you just elaborate on that and perhaps outline where you think you might have lost share and what you're doing to sort of regain this? That'd be great. Thanks.
Yeah, so there's no independent data which can tell us we have an X amount of market share or Y amount of market share. But what I do have a line of sight of the volume which we used to sell or Boral used to sell over the last 10 years. And if I just take that into account and apply a certain amount of GDP growth, which has happened over the last 10 years, I would say today that we have lost market share. I think that's a factual statement. And the degree of loss has been in different states, different places. So we have to make sure that we want to regain that leadership, but we don't want to regain the leadership by giving up silly price in the marketplace and just buying volume for volume's sake. We are not interested in that. There is no desire on Boral to get volume for volume's sake. That's bad business. But we want to do that by improving our customer service. We want to do that by, you know, making sure there's a customer loyalty and a factor for them to come back to Boral. But the intention obviously would be, if you were doing anybody coming into my shoes would be looking for a historical volume and say, okay, well, clearly we lost that. And market has grown, so we got to go back to that, at least minimum that volume. But I repeat again, not volume for volume's sake. That is not what Boral is about anymore.
Got it, thanks. And I guess a follow-up just on the volume. The aspiration for double-digit EBIT margins, no timeline around that. Let's just call it medium term. Does that need a, a pickup in volumes from the current levels. I guess you've said FY24 is similar demand to 23, but to get to that double-digit EBIT margin level, do you think you need a step up in volume and the operating leverage that comes along with it?
I think ultimately, Brooke, you will need, in any business, you need three things: volume, price, and cost, right? You've got to move lever in all of those. I can't tell you today mathematically that volume needs to go by one and price needs to go by three and cost needs to come down by four. I just don't know. But we know enough now. We've done enough work to know that the permutation combination of three will get us to double digit. So I'm not walking away from that. It's an absolute doable. We can see the pathway to it. But to predict that we need, of course, absolutely. Every time you reduce your cost and get an extra cubic meter of volume at top, that gives you operating leverage, right? I am just basing on the fact that the concrete has grown up by, say, 2-2.5% long term in Australia over long term. And I think we are happy with that. If that comes through, we are good. I think I'm not worried about going. In fact, market behaves silly if the volume shifts too much in the top or the bottom. So a normal GDP for us is good enough for us to deliver.
That's great. Thanks.
Your next question comes from Simon Thackray with Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Vic. Can you hear me okay?
I can, Simon. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for taking the question. You can see the obsession, volume and price, from the Q&A, and I'm not going to be any different, to be honest with you. There's $190 billion worth of work out there at the moment to be done. The roads pipeline has doubled since pre-COVID. The building pipeline is up by 50%. I'm just opining or trying to ruminate on your comments about sort of volume flat to maybe slightly up in 24 against that pipeline, particularly given your roads revenue exposure increased by two percentage points to 45% of revenue. So unless you're seeing project cancellation or project delays or something, how do you reconcile the pipeline of work with your commentary about flat volume?
Yeah. So I want to make a clarify. Thank you for raising that, man. I appreciate that. I am bullish about starting FY24 second half onwards. I think the project pipeline is good across the business. I think resi is going to come back as well. Commercial is going to come back, and so is infrastructure. Infrastructure will move both in engineering infrastructure as well as social infrastructure. All I'm saying is you can only see volume what you can see. Our quotation is high. Our pipeline is strong. Question is when the projects drop in. And in that context, what we are seeing today, we are saying that the first half FY24 could be slower considering the way we're coming out of quarter four of FY23. But I remain very optimistic for future. I'm not worried about the volume in medium to long term at all.
No, that's helpful, and nor would I expect you to be, given the amount of work, notwithstanding there's a big dollop of inflation in those numbers already.
Right.
But when you talk about first half 24, sorry to be obtuse, are you comparing that to second half 23 or to first half 23?
I know I was comparing to first half 23. First half 23.
So you think it'll be sort of flat on first half 23 or Is that really what you want us to get to?
Yeah, I think we are saying, and this is what I was trying to say, I think, to Brooke before as well, when he talked about the price. If you do mathematically, you'll see the price didn't go up since October. We should get the price benefit in first half, and if the volume remains flat on first half FY23, we're still looking at okay, right? And then the volume comes closer. So I think that's how we are thinking about it. Simon, but you know, we can all sit here and kind of speculate on volume, but that's how we are thinking it, right? So,
yeah, and maybe just within that question, I said, you know, any experience on seeing any of your projects that have been cancelled? I mean, there's a lot of capacity constraint in the industry broadly, but both building and infra. Have you seen any experience of that, of people having to cancel contracts or novate contracts to other contractors?
I have not seen a single cancelled contract. Let me put that way.
It might
be slowing down for funding. It might be slowing down for planning reasons, but I have not seen a single project, major project, being cancelled. They're all there, and our customers are telling us their pipeline is full. Yeah.
And they're all fixed price at the moment.
No, they will not be.
Thanks, Vic.
Your next question comes from Daniel Kang with CLSA. Please go ahead.
Oh, morning, everyone. Just to continue that discussion, Vic, you commented earlier on social infrastructure projects picking up. Do you expect it to offset the big infrastructure projects that are likely to slow down?
We are not seeing that, Daniel. I think the question, we have not seen any project cancel, as I was telling Simon before. What I am opining is that there is, if you look at the announcements made by the Labor, with the government in Queensland, government in New South Wales, we are picking up thematics that money will shift to what we call social infrastructure, schools, hospitals, et cetera. The announcements we have seen, along with the projects which has already been announced, by the way. Apart from Victorian government, I have not seen any government either shelving any project or even thinking of delaying the project. I think the message coming through is what is happening is going through, but the next phase is going to be social infrastructure. And remember, then at some point, the Queensland Olympics investment comes through as well. So from that all perspective, we are not kind of negative on that.
Okay, got it. And just a question on your guidance, I guess 270 to 300 mil EBIT in 24 implies over 20% growth from 23. Just want to unpack, I guess, the key buckets that will drive that outcome. I mean, you mentioned that volume will be flat to up. Then are we looking at basically pricing momentum and costs to drive that outcome?
It'll be a combination of all three, Daniel. It'll be a combination of volume, price, and cost, right? So remember, the cost initiatives we have taken this year will benefit FY24. The price initiatives we have taken this year will benefit. I'm not saying, and I'm still saying pricing is volume flat to up. Depends on half and half, right? So I'm still saying flat to up. Combine that with better pricing for the full year, combined with the lower cost, gives you a very significant operating leverage. Right? So that's how we think
about
it. But it will be a combination of all three. I just want to make sure it's clear.
And the risks on the top end and the lower end of that range, where do you see the greatest risk? Is it volume?
I don't know, Dan. I mean, seriously, I think it'll be, they're all three equally up and down. So, I mean, when we did our risk and opportunities, they all come through. So I won't put a particular number on any one of those, man. We'll just work through. We've got to work through all three anyway. So.
Absolutely. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Sam So with Citi. Please go ahead.
Oh, hey guys, thanks for taking my question.
Yes,
just a simple one from me, just when we think about the comp, can you perhaps talk to the volume that you lost from the weather?
I don't know, and we don't talk about weather. It is what it is. So our volume was up, price was up. So we haven't done the calculations of how much volume we've lost for weather.
Okay. So then maybe the mixing's up on the cost side. Your energy looked up 21%, implying that was sequentially flat, half on half. Just wondering, one, is that right? And then two, from all your hedging initiatives, should we think of your cost base as more fixed going forward and more operating leverage in the business, both up and down?
You're talking about purely energy, Sam?
Yeah, I think it was 21% there on page 14, yeah. And it was up 50 or something at the first half. So just wondering if that was like for like.
So it was up on FY23, but previous year by FY22 by 21%. And you're asking, your question is, in the second half of FY23, was it flat over second half of FY22?
First half. 23, flat on first half, 23.
Yeah, it'll be flat on first half, 23. That'll be right, yeah. Flat to slightly up. It's definitely up, but not materially up, yeah.
I think the other thing I would just add is probably an important part of that question was the hedging. So we're not 100% hedged. We have a hedging strategy, but I wouldn't think of it as fixed cost because we're not hedged at 100%.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Rohan Gallagher with Jarden Group. Please go ahead.
Hi, Vic. It's good morning, everybody. You must be almost finished, so you're almost there, mate. One question for clarity. I think everyone's trying to sort of ask the question about 53 times, and it's not volume related. Can I just confirm whether any of your segments were in losses in FY23? And the way you're planning on running this business on a go-forward basis, do you believe all segments can be profitable across the portfolio?
100%. 100%. They should be, they must be, they will be profitable. Yes.
And in FY23, the status of...
Yeah, they are profitable. I mean, you know, everybody made money, everybody was profitable. Obviously, prior to me starting, the allocations was sitting in center and all, but I won't bore you with the detail. But the simple question is they all made money and they will all make money.
Okay, thank you. And the second question in regards to the guidance, obviously recognising the lumpy nature of property profits, can you sort of unpack any assumptions associated with property profits as part of your outlook statement relative to FY23, et cetera?
No, nothing material on property in FY24, mate. And if we do any property deal, board has resolved that it'll go under significant items anyway, so we can clearly show you. Our aim I'm glad you kind of pointed that out, mate. It is our aim here is to create a recurring revenue and cash flow coming from our property strategy. Selling properties short-term is not our strategy. If it happens, that'll be significant because that does not help the business. I mean, it helps the business, but doesn't necessarily help the long-term earnings. So it'll take some time, but I'm very confident over the next couple of years, you will see that come through, and then we'll have a long-term recurring revenue as per the segment. Yeah. So, but no, this in our earning guidance for next year is pretty clean.
All right. And there will be a modest recurring property profits as part of that EBIT target, or
we definitely don't want to make a loss in FY24 on property, mate. I think
No. It's more the case of, you know, if it's 10 million, 20 million, that's fine. Whether it's a material change on last year, it's just more identifying the quality of your EBIT outlook more so than anything else.
There's no material uplift. We're not expecting that. We just want it to be break even to positive.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That is all the time we have for questions today. I'll now hand back to Mr. Bansal for any closing remarks.
Great. Thank you, operator. Listen, thank you guys for, ladies and gentlemen, for everybody's support. Thank you for all the good questions. Makes us sharper. And look forward to seeing you on the roadshow. Appreciate the support. Have a good one. Thank you. Bye.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.